Climate Change from the Ground Up with soil scientist Mark Clark.
Hi, Mark. Hey, another week, another story. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, Joseph. And, ready to talk about climate change today.
All right. Well, what's today's subject?
Well, today we're going to talk about climate change today, a comparison with the Pleistocene. And when we say Pleistocene, we mean the last ice age.
Oh, okay. And, okay.
Yeah, because there was lots of climate change that happened during the ice age. But before we talk about this, I want to talk about a couple of items in the news with climate change.
Okay.
And with the recent developments in Europe with the war in Ukraine and the recent evaluation of emissions worldwide, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, they just released a report stating that the world is not going in the right direction. It's on track for a rate of warming of 2.5 degrees centigrade or more above our pre-industrial levels, and warming that, if we continue on the path we're on, we'll reach 2.5 degrees by the end of this century. And that's almost a full degree above what's desirable. And it's because of Glasgow agreements. The countries are not following through on their CO2 emission agreements because of the world politics right now, and the fact that there are shortages of fuel and in terms of gas and oil that come out of Ukraine and Russia. And so they're resorting to burning, coal, or continuing to burn coal. And so doesn't look like they're going to meet their emission promises. And
I think some countries are actually burning more coal now.
Yeah. Yeah. So if this is true, we're faced with the severe consequences. It's bad news. That is bad news. And so on a better note, I don't know if you heard the outcome of the Brazilian presidential election.
Oh, I did. So, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's being kind of hailed as a crucial victory for the Amazon and global climate, with the experts saying that the country now has an opportunity to curb the rampant deforestation of the Amazon rainforest and kind of jumpstart the green economy. So the bottom line is Da Silva, he is the fellow that won the election.
Right.
I narrowly defeated Bolsonaro. And he has an agenda to stop deforestation and support and become a member, of the UN's climate task group. So,
well, now he has the support of the people with his election. So that's really great news. Yep.
It really is. So anyway, that's a good part. So let's jump into today's comparison, climate change today and a comparison with the Pleistocene. And in order to better understand how climate has changed as a part of natural cycles and processes on the Earth, we can look back to the last ice age, or what an epoch that was called the Pleistocene. And so this geologic epoch lasted from 2.5 million years ago to about 10,000 years ago. So this is a period from 10,000 years to 2.5 million years ago. And during the last ice age, temperatures in Alaska were estimated to be between 3 and 5 degrees Celsius, or 5 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit, colder than today during the glacial parts of the ice age there.
Right, right.
And glaciers covered about 42% of Alaska during that period.
42%. Wow.
Yeah. And that's compared to roughly 3.5% today. And yeah. So So this period, the Pleistocene epoch, is remarkable, not just for the alternation of warm and cold periods that happened during that, 10,000 to 2.5 million years, but for the scale and rapidity of the change in the climate in terms of geologic time. And this is in terms of geologic time. And basically there were at least 20 glacial and interglacial cycles during this time. So during the Pleistocene, we went through warm spells and cold spells, spells with ice and periods when the climate warmed and we didn't have ice. And this represents an interglacial cycle of about once every 100,000 years on average. So it went from an icy glacial covered landscape to a warmer glacier free landscape about once every 100,000 years. And it's fast in terms of geologic time. However, it's slow compared to the recent human-induced warming, which has taken only 200 years. So, we used to think the Pleistocene had quick changes in climate, but until human-induced climate change started up. Now, we can see that our 200 years is just a drop in the bucket compared to how long it took for the climate to change during the Pleistocene.
And, well, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, it is. And it's worth noting that we're currently in an interglacial warm period. I mean, we're in this cycle of warm right now. So
is this the Milankovitch cycle?
Yeah, and the cycles, on the Earth are what they're called. Are there the cycles of Earth climate are called Milankovitch cycles, and the cycles change the amount of sun that reaches the Earth, and then of course, if there's less sun, then it's cooler. We have more glaciers, more sun, just the opposite. But these cycles have a profound influence on our climate. And there's really three separate types of cycles that occur within the Milankovitch. The first one's called the eccentricity cycle. And we can think of this as it's the orbit of the Earth around the sun. And our orbit changes from like a circular orbit, pretty uniform, to an elliptical orbit, which is not. So we're close to the sun, closer to the sun at certain times of the year and further away at others. So, and that cycle occurs about once every 100,000 years. So that's one of the cycles. That's the longest one. And then we have a shorter cycle. It's a variation in the tilt of the Earth on its axis. So the Earth itself tilts on its axis over time, and it does it in a predictable pattern. So, and it does a cycle of alternation on the axis about every 41,000 years. And so the Earth, the part that's facing the sun, or our equator, is actually shifting, and so the sun hits the part of the Earth that's facing directly towards the sun, and so this gradually changes over time, and so it's the tilt of the axis. And the third one is what we call the precession of the Earth's axis. And this is a phenomenon like the wobble of a top as it spins on its axis. You know how the top of it'll wobble back and forth? Well, our Earth does that too. It does it over a period of time. It does a wobble about every 19 to 24,000 years, roughly.
So that means the wobble is completely normal.
Yes.
If it does it normal on a top and it does it on a planet, that's pretty amazing.
And it's predictable. We know these cycles. So if we understand these cycles, the cycles initiate the change between cold, glacial, and warmer interglacial parts of the ice age. So that is the principal driver that goes on during these warm and cold periods. And there were periods in the past during periods in our geologic history where we had catastrophic changes that were caused by impacts by asteroids. But this is predictable climate change that goes on, takes thousands of years to transition. So the coastal environments during the Pleistocene were controlled in large part by fluctuating levels of the sea. And this is as a result of the many glaciations on land and the subsequent release of meltwater during the interglacial time. So the interglacials got warmer, more ice melted, sea level came up. And sea level has fluctuated almost continuously between the interglacial levels, like those of today, and levels during times of maximum glaciation, such as like 18,000 years ago, we were at a period where the glaciers were at kind of a maximum, and sea levels dropped to more than 300 feet lower than they are today during that time. So
wow.
That's
wow.
Yeah. And of course, it took thousands of years to do it. But at the end of the glacial, the end of the Pleistocene, as we were starting to approach the end of it, there were 38 genuses of species of animals on the planet and 60 specific species of megafauna. These are the big mammals that occurred during the Pleistocene, the mammoths, the sloth, the bison. These 60 species of megafauna became extinct as the climate changed.
Wow.
So it took several thousand years for it to change, but it basically meant the end of 60 species. Again, this took thousands of years, and the average temperature change was 3 to 5 degrees Celsius or 5 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit. So it wasn't much of a change. I mean, right now we're looking at over a degree and a half Celsius over 200 years. So we're already halfway there.
Wow.
And so the UN predicts that if we continue at the current rate, we're fully one third or 1 million species of plants and animals are at risk of extinction by the end of the century. So we're seeing this massive extinction in a fraction of the time that it took at the end of the Pleistocene. And we're looking at, instead of 60 species, or we're looking at, literally thousands and thousands of species of plants and animals.
So there's no real scale or measurement for how catastrophic this loss of species really is then?
No, we really don't. I mean,
it's big.
It's large. And the only way we can really do it is categorize it by environments, by plant communities, that habitats. If we lose habitats, these things have no place to go. And especially in the tropics, we're starting to see habitat loss caused by warming climate. So back to our Pleistocene discussion, there's significant climate changes are observed over the entire Earth during the Pleistocene, this glacial interglacial oscillation that we see. So in other parts of the Earth not covered by ice during the glacier, the glaciation, the climate landscapes were quite different than they are today. I mean, it's pretty amazing how, even though they weren't influenced directly by ice, they were influenced by the climate that was created by that ice being in place. And as I mentioned earlier, 42% of Alaska was covered with ice during the glaciation. However, much of interior Alaska was ice free. And since these towering glaciers blanketed the Alaska Range and the southern ranges of Alaska, it blocked airflow and moisture from the Gulf of Alaska. And we had these huge winds that blew throughout interior Alaska. And they blew, off the ice, off the mountains to the south. And these strong winds blew these billowing clouds of silt that covered landscapes. And several periods of wind erosion and deposition occurred during this time. There were deposition, erosional episodes, and the vegetation was completely different. We had more of a steppe vegetation, a mixture of like grasses, herbs, and low shrubs with kind of localized stands of birch and aspen, hardwoods. You know, it was more of a high, cold desert of Wyoming than it was interior Alaska as we know it today. You know, instead
That's
of these...
Cool.
Yeah, it was really a different environment. And instead of the spongy ground associated with black spruce forests and permafrost, much of the interior ground was dry and firm, but it was still frozen. Most of it was still frozen. And these persistent winds removed the winter sparse snow, and frost penetrated deep into the soils, and the firm ground allowed the megafauna of the Pleistocene to flourish. You know, the mammoths were able to, well, you know, move freely across these firm landscapes.
In other words, not boggy tundra.
Yeah, they didn't get bogged down.
Ah.
And you know, there were still boggy areas, but they were just a minor part of that landscape. So.
Sure, sure. Climate Change from the Ground Up with Joseph Davis and soil scientist Mark Clark is brought to you on KVRF, Big Cabbage Radio. As a member-supported community radio station, we encourage you to join Big Cabbage Radio today by visiting bigcabbageradio.org. Live on your radio, or stream us live over the internet on your computer, tablet, and smartphone. Listen to our local programs as together we build, inform, and celebrate community through local radio. Listen to the Glacier Review from Lion's Head and Glacier View all the way through Chicklin, Sutton, Palmer, Butte, and Wasilla. We are broadcasting in Palmer at 89.7 FM, Sutton at 89.5 FM, and in Chicklin and Glacier View at 88.3 on your FM dial. My name is Joseph Davis. So what does community radio mean? Well, in this instance, on Climate Change from the Ground Up, I had a 10-minute interview with Mark at his home on my way between Glacier View and Palmer. Well, it's history since then. We have a weekly program. So, community radio, what's your passion? Do you have a program waiting to come out? Call us at Big Cabbage Radio Station. Talk to Mike. Maybe there's a program in you.
So the grazers and browsers, like the Pleistocene bison and the mammoth, the camel, the horse, as well as the smaller ungulates that have survived the transition of climate to modern times. So, you know, there are some that survived it. Of course, the muskox, we're familiar with them. Another one, the incredible Saiga antelope. And this is an antelope that still lives in Siberia. It doesn't live here. It didn't survive here. And, but it's still alive over there, and it's critically endangered. But some of them actually did survive through the end of the ice age.
Wow. And, that's an old animal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You're not kidding. The massive amounts of Pleistocene animals, you know, when you think of it, the Eurasian steppe, you know, these vast areas of Eurasian steppe, they expanded all the way from Siberia across the Bering Land Bridge, what we call, you know, the Bering Land Bridge, that area where the Bering Sea, because the water has dropped 300 feet, exposed this mass of land. They were allowed to freely move back and forth. It was all part of the same landmass, and the massive amounts of water tied up in the glaciers worldwide meant the sea levels were, you know, 300 feet lower, and the landscape in the north looked a lot different. These steppe biomes extended for thousands of miles into Siberia and into the northern North American continent, and again, this transition between the glacial and interglacial was thousands of years. And So let's talk about other places in the United States during the Pleistocene. What was going on there? There were many inland areas that have much wetter climates. You know, the salt flats in Utah were all flooded with water. There were these balsams, these lakes, inland lakes that extended for miles. The Great Salt Lake is a remnant of one of those Pleistocene lakes, and it extended all the way down into what was called Lake Bonneville. Large areas of water bodies that were encapsulated in the Basin and Range Province in Nevada and Utah.
And so lots of fish.
Probably. And there were large inland lakes elsewhere in the world. You know, the Great Rift Valley in Africa had some big, large lakes that were associated with that time when there was a lot more rainfall. And there was a shift in rainfall, the rainfall belts with, you know, reduced evaporation and increased cloudiness. That seemed to be the climates that persisted over much of the, you know, much of the planet outside of the glacial realm itself. So at the glacial maximum, when the sea level dropped this 300 feet, sea surface temperature also dropped by as much as 10 degrees Celsius or 18 degrees Fahrenheit in some of the mid latitudes of the North America, of the North Atlantic. So remember we talk about why sea level is going up so much now too. Well, one of the principal parts is expansion because of the heat. The heat has expanded the water. Well, you can imagine the contraction that must have occurred in that water at these lower temperatures. So the seas contracted, they were smaller, they occupied less space, sea level dropped appreciably. And even as far into the Caribbean, there was the seas there were 3 degrees Celsius or about 5.5 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than they are today. So the changes in the atmospheric CO2 and methane correlate quite well through these periods of ice and interglacial periods. And so we have seen ice cores that came out of Antarctica, which, you know, go all the way back 145,000 years. We see patterns in CO2 and methane that basically support the fact that these periods of warm periods had more CO2 and methane, and the cold periods had less. And those kind of corroborated the fact that these ice age periods, the periods of ice and interglacials, actually did occur and were well documented in the, you know, the ice cores that came out of Antarctica. And so that gives you an idea of the fact that, you know, our atmosphere has changed. CO2 and methane are good indicators of temperatures that did change. And usually, you know, those changes, they went up during periods of warm, and they went down in concentration when the temperatures dropped. So kind of some points to make from this Pleistocene epoch. We're currently in a relative interglacial period right now. And within 85,000 years, we should be back into a major glacial. If the cycles that we've experienced hold true, if our predictions hold true and they're consistent with what's happened in the past, we should go into another glacial ice period in 85,000 years. And the peaks of these glaciations have been occurring about every 100,000 years. And the Milankovitch cycles predict that and support it. And during peak glacial periods, the global average temperatures are 3 to 5 degrees Celsius colder than today, with vast portions of the northern continents covered with thick ice sheets. And atmospheric CO2 concentrations are low. They're at or slightly below 200 parts per million. So they're in the ice periods, low CO2 concentrations, colder temperatures. The cold intervals are separated by these warmer, short intervals known as the interglacials. And during those times, the atmospheric CO2 concentrations as measured from the Greenland and Antarctica show about 280 parts per million of CO2. Of course, due to recent human activity, the concentrations of CO2 are now above 400 parts per million, which is, of course, much higher than any time during the past interglacial periods. So all of the warm periods that occurred during the interglacials, none of them even approached the CO2 levels that we have now. And there is the possibility that increases in CO2 will result in significant climate, you know, climate changes. And so, and I guess maybe I wasn't really clear with that. During the interglacial periods, CO2 levels were high as a result of the warming temperatures that we had, which were because we were having more incidental sunlight coming in from the sun. As it warmed up, more vegetation grew, more CO2 was starting to evolve and move into the atmosphere through the new vegetation, and CO2 levels were increased because of the warmer temperatures and the more vegetation.
Okay.
So it's kind of, so these are some of the, you know, some of the characteristics of the climate and how it changed during the last ice age. And these ice ages are believed to be triggered by small regular changes in the Earth's orbit and the amount of sunlight that comes in. However, the transitions take thousands of years compared to our current change, which has only required 200 years. And that's my summary. And back to you, Joseph.
So we really have no yardstick, no measuring scale for the immense difference that is happening right now, which means that we have an extraordinary challenge for the human race. Is that about kind of how it goes?
Absolutely. We've got a challenge, and we don't have anything to compare it to other than, you know, the large events that have happened, the catastrophic impacts by asteroids, right. And those basically erased almost all of life from the planet at the time. In terms of natural changes, we have never seen a change like this that's occurred naturally within the normal cyclical processes on the planet.
Well, I'll leave you with the new word of the year. It is permacrisis. Permacrisis has been around since the 70s when it was identified some challenges in the Earth, but now it's become to the forefront as the word of this year, according to one of the dictionaries that measures and monitors use of words, permacrisis, which is, you know, way bigger than cycle or annual or whatever. So,
yeah.
Mark, yes. That's really nicely knit together a good beginning with the little bits of facts ahead, and then this wonderful story of the Pleistocene and now. So thank you very much.
Okay, Joseph, thank you. We'll see you again next week.
I look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Bye now.